Welcome everyone to this special membership call here on November 12, 2019. My name is Eric Roth, Managing Director of SAMS, and I'm here with Mary Kern, President of SAMS, and we both have our own shamanic astrology practices and came through the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. So today, this call is a special benefit for members of SAMS, and you know each call is going to have a different topic, and today we have picked the topic of Pluto and the underworld. So we're going to be placing a lot of focus on that today and have lots of time for questions. So be prepared for that towards the last, after 45 minutes of Mary and I talking, we can start to open it up to questions. And we've already gotten a couple of questions that have been emailed in from members ahead of time, so we were able to look at that prior to our call today. So Mary, would you like to share some things?
Well, I think we were going to open it up by just kind of defining the Pluto, both as a planet and as an energy. It's located furthest from the sun, and is in a ring of belt orbiting out past Neptune. It was first discovered in 1930 by Clyde Tombaugh and was named after the Disney cartoon dog by the same name, which I know I found both humorous and surprising when I first learned about that. But
Mary, can I interrupt just a moment?
Absolutely.
So Pluto was actually not named after the cartoon dog.
That is fake news, because I have that in many of my notes. I know Pluto in Roman mythology was the ruler of the underworld or the unconscious self, more recently defined that way. But the earlier name for this same god was Hades, and that later became just the name for the underworld itself. In Roman religion and mythology, it represented the god who presides over the afterlife. And most of these ancient cultures all had a similar energy. In Egypt, Osiris was originally the god of water and vegetation and became the god of death and the underlife. And in the Hindu culture, there was Kali, the goddess of both misfortune and recoverer of misfortune, which we'll see relates directly to this energy. And then there was Kali, and then there was also earlier, before either one of those, Nirji, which was the mother of three, fear, great fear, and death. So this has been going on for a long time. I was going to say there was also Durga in there, the divine feminine force of Shakti, who was an incarnation of the mother goddess. So that's kind of the setup around which we're going to talk. Carl Jung said that Pluto represents what he calls the shadow, what's unconscious to our awareness, and it's what we tend to deny, bury, and refuse to see or feel oftentimes. So what else can we say about defining just the rudimentary makeup of what we call Pluto?
Yeah, no, thank you, Mary. I may have misheard you when you spoke, so I apologize for that, but there has been some misinformation out there since Pluto was originally named, that Pluto was named for the Roman god of the underworld. And not the,
was it discovered the same year that Disney created Pluto?
That I do not know, but Disney had characters already created, I believe, by then, Walt Disney. So I don't know for sure, but I know that there's some relationship with one of the astronomers. I think it might have been Percival Lowell's. One of his children that loved the character Pluto.
Yeah, and that's a story I remember. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
So, yeah, okay. So as Mary, as you shared, this particular planet symbolizes the underworld, especially here in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. It's kind of synonymous. It's equating to that particular world that we have. And in this body of knowledge that originated from Daniel Giammario in the 1980s, the underworld is one of the three worlds, and one of the primary background environments that these outer planets and symbolize in this paradigm. The inner planets themselves, they kind of occupy all three of that in their phases. Mm. So the underworld we're going to be sharing a lot on as we discuss Pluto, its initiations and what it means on the natal chart, and also sharing stories about this. Mary, you've got some, I've got some, and we have a couple of others that we can share as well from people who have submitted questions. So,
wonderful.
Yes, so thank you for identifying and introducing Pluto. Go ahead.
The astrological symbol has a meaning within itself. It's created by the crescent of the soul, some say impaled on the cross of matter, and it has a circle of spirit inside the soul, which to me, it's not hiding, but it's really telling us to go to our very center, the center of our being, the center of our soul, where we're connected with spirit, in order to really transcend what Pluto brings us as a way of going to a higher level of ourselves. So we talk about this as a Pluto initiation, and I found a really cool quote that I wanted to talk about in relationship to the word initiation. And this is by Marie-Louise von Franz. And she says that every dark thing one falls into can be called an initiation. To be initiated into a thing means to go into it. The shamans say that being a medicine man begins by falling into the power of the demons, the one who pulls out the dark places, who pulls out of the dark places becomes the medicine man, and the one who stays in the dark places is the sick person. So you can make very psychological illnesses, you can take those as an initiation, and even the worst things you fall into are an effort at initiation. For you are something that belongs to you, and now you have to get out of it. And that totally is what Pluto feels like to me. I mean, there's no wiggle room. You're there, and you have to either face your fear. It's a matter of either fear can penetrate your inner world and paralyze you, or you can transform every attack of fear to higher resonance and remain open to your emotional world. So, yeah, I love that. I thought that's each of the planets has their initiation, but Pluto's is really more shamanic and takes us into, like we said, the underworld, the depths of our soul, the great unconscious.
Yes, thank you. I love that definition.
Yeah, I want you to tell us about the framework of the Pluto cycle, just exactly how that works, how long it is, and the anatomy of that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, just recently, I did a reading for a client, and when I mentioned Pluto initiation and I mentioned the word surrender, this person who is also a coach, and she's also written a book, has told me how she views surrender, and she views that as a definition of leaning into.
Ooh.
Which tells me, you know, kind of captures what you shared about initiation. You lean into it, you go into it. You are initiated into it. And so surrender as a process is not just, you know, freezing movement, but moving into that process. It is surrender is an initiation all on its own.
Mm. And that's a year and two-thirds cycle once you, and it starts, what, 1 degree before that you actually have your target degree on your chart. You were telling me earlier about how the length of this cycle is changing, and the age that one experiences it has changed over time. So right now you said, I think that yours was at 30, did you say 30, you are 37 years old when you experienced your first Pluto square?
No, I was 36 at 36. The time when it started.
Yeah.
And it ended before, or just around, right around my 38th birthday, it ended.
So 37, 38. In 1800, I know Daniel told us that it happened at age 89. So you had to survive and live a long time before you could even experience it. And then that was a square. You may have had it transiting some of your personal planets, nodes, or angles prior to that time. And those born in 1900 experienced it at age 65. Again, we weren't even aware of it in terms of astrology during those years. And someone born in 48 would have experienced it around 41. So it has definitely moved around a bit. Mm-hmm. I was born when Pluto was in Leo, so I was part of that Leo-Pluto generation. And
thank you, Mary. Go ahead.
No, I was done.
Just for those of you out there that are new to astrology that are listening to this, either live or recorded, just to kind of reframe what we're talking about here when we say Pluto square, we're talking about Pluto moving one quarter of the way around the sun. And our lives are in rhythm with the night sky, with the solar system itself. And so there are periods Pluto in its orbit where it moves faster, it's closer to the sun. In fact, part of its orbit goes inside the orbit of Neptune. That happened in the 1980s, early 90s. And Mary, you mentioned that its closest point in 1989.
That was when it was closest to the Earth and the Sun, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about Pluto square, Pluto transits, we're talking about, we have a natal chart. We're born with something. It captures the moment of our birth. But that those planets are still moving. They're still in motion. And so in my life, I had my Pluto square Pluto. That means Pluto was able to travel one quarter of the way around in its 248-year orbit, one quarter of the way at about 36-plus years before it came into my life as a square. And then it ended right shortly thereafter my 38th birthday. So the cycle that Mary was defining, you know, with the 1 degree orb. And, you know, in we have in the shamanic timeline course, both in person and online, this is talked about and how to calculate those cycles. But a 1 degree orb is our general rule of thumb when it comes to most of the cycles. And other cycles, it depends on their retrograde loop, just as Jupiter and Saturn and then the inner planets have their own variety. But with Pluto, Pluto and Neptune have the longest cycles that we experience in regards to the, the non-synodic return cycles, which Mars and Venus are a part of. So I just wanted to share this, and we there's going to be people alive that are alive today, and that many of us will be experiencing one half of a Pluto orbit in our lives, where in people in the 1800s, as you mentioned, Mary, they only got to experience the one quarter turn. So some of us that are getting into our 80s and or 90s will experience political opposition if we get that far. Some out there may be listening and have already experienced that.
I think when you look at the number of years that it takes Pluto to go through different signs too, you can imagine how irregular that orbit is, because some signs it can transit through in 12 years and some it's 24. So that's a big difference.
Yeah, in fact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something, Mary, you had a question about when you brought this up a few minutes ago, that the cycles themselves of Pluto are gradually, slowly getting a bit longer. And I did do some looking ahead in the future about Pluto cycles, and I have found, say, for example, in the 2030s and beyond, they get closer to 2 years. And according to what I calculated in astrology program, you can use solar fire, time passages, or perhaps another software, or just the ephemeris itself of the book, you can calculate the cycle of Pluto. And the one that I calculated is approximately a year and 11 months in the 2030s. And then it gets, when we get to the 2040s and 2050s and beyond, it gets closer, much, much closer to about 2 years. Now, I don't know if this is if we need to radically change the definition of a Pluto cycle. This is kind of far in the future. We're only at the end of 2019. So, you know, this is, but it's important to recognize that Pluto is slowing down in its orbit. And what was once called a planet was voted to be changed by the International Astronomical Union to a dwarf planet. But there are many people, many scientists, astronomers that still refer to it as a planet. And I call it a planet, although to, you know, be politically correct, we can call it a dwarf planet. But it's still, it doesn't change the nature of what Pluto is, regardless of what it is called. In fact, the NASA chief back this past summer is a fan of calling Pluto a planet and doing away with the dwarf planet status of that object. So I wanted to just share that information with you here.
I think we can choose what we want to call it. I think that's what you're saying. and it is such a powerful energy that
yes.
I personally am going to keep that in my planet category as well. Yes. So when you go through this cycle, this 1 2/3 cycle, getting bigger, depending about when you were born, it takes you into events beyond what you can control. And sometimes that first part of it is referred to as the dark night of the soul, because you get into this experience that you cannot detach from it. You can't use your strength or your mental power to overcome it. And you definitely have to face whatever fear is directly related to the to what Pluto is impacting on your natal chart. So you basically are put to a place where you have to deeply feel your feelings. And Pluto and its resonant energy of Scorpio are considered water elements. Water elements are the feeling function. So we're going into our feeling function, which is really where we're connected to the divine. Because I so remember when Daniel told me that you can connect by going up and out or by going down and in, and basically into your own soul. I mean, the universe is within you. So if you go deep enough within yourself, you reach the same place as where we think of Pluto in the external realm. And I think that's a beautiful analogy of how that works. And then after you've gone through that, you develop
you integrate what you've learned. It's like the butterfly emerges from being in the chrysalis, and you develop a sense of empowerment and a rich, rich sense of aliveness, because there's growth and abundance, and you don't return the same as before this cycle. You felt disempowered as events took over, and now you've resolved things and you've come out the other side of it. Mm.
There are, speaking of Pluto and something you have on your what we're doing today on mm-hmm. our outline is also just sharing with everyone here that there was some discussion about the average number of years Pluto spends in a sign, which is, I think, of roughly 22 years per sign. And takes, as we know, takes 248 years to complete its orbit on average. And each of the signs represent a generation, so what we call in the school Pluto generations. Mm. And so many of us were born in the Pluto and Leo generation, the Virgo generation, the Libra generation, and the Scorpio generation. And only, in recent years, of course, the millennials and the generation that follows born in when Pluto was in Sagittarius and now Capricorn. And that, when Pluto moves into Aquarius in 2024, that starts a new insight into the next Pluto generation. According to what I have and the research I've done around, depends on how one defines how many years a generation is and what years are part of what particular generation. There's a lot of gray area here, but the Leo people were in part the baby boomers and the generation before, which can be called in part the silent generation, and the people that were born in Virgo, Pluto in Virgo, also part of the baby boomers, as well as the early years of Generation X, and then the people that were born in Pluto in Libra were Generation X, and then the people that were born in Pluto when Pluto was in Scorpio between 83 and 95 were the millennials. So again, it depends on if a person's looking at certain studies of generations of people, they can assign some modification to that. This is not set in stone as far as the definition of the generations, but Pluto definitely has major influence in the expression of those generations as a collective, as a community, as a nation, and so forth. And so one can look at that, their own chart, and look at the generation they were born in and what sign, and to know that the sign that Pluto is in represents a larger framework, a larger environment, and it's not your personal sign necessarily, but you're part of the greater collective on that level. But the house position does represent, and Mary, you were talking to me about it earlier today, this morning, in fact, and that it does play a role in Pluto's expression when we're experiencing a certain underworld initiations that pertain to that particular house position.
Right. And then if you have personal planets or angles that are within, excluding Mars here, but within 10 to, with Pluto, it would be anything within 10 degrees is going to be impacted by it. The closer, the more the impact. And it's giving you clues. For instance, my Pluto in Leo is right next to my Venus in Leo, and that's giving me a clue that I'm going to learn about my Leo goddess and be able to go to new levels of being my Leo goddess by surrendering in the underworld. Those will be the experiences that take me to new levels. So that's important to know. I mean, even just kind of going out the door, it gives you some clues as to what your chart is telling you. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. In fact,
all I was going to say is I don't want to forget that for us to mention that there's another way to experience Pluto on your natal chart. Why don't you explain that in terms of personal planets next to the sun?
Oh, yes. So the ancients, you know, the Hellenistic culture and before, when a personal planet, and when we say personal planet, we are referring to especially primarily the visible ones, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. The ancients considered those when it moved within the glare of the sun. They considered it in being with great mystery, being in the underworld, being in the hidden realm. And in fact, one of the interesting things about the underworld is that the word hidden and occulted go far back as well in relating to, you know, to what is hidden, what is in the invisible realm, which would be considered the underworld, or what we call the underworld today, or the below realm. In fact, the goddesses too, I'm sure, but Hades and Pluto, they were not necessarily seen on a, you know, physical imagery, at least their faces in most cases, that their face was hidden, that they were hidden, and they didn't really have a, quote, physical presence in that sense, like many of the other gods and goddesses did. And so if we think of the a visible planet such as, say, Venus or Mercury, and you were when a person was born with the sun and Venus in, say, a certain sign, and they were only, say, within 10 degrees, as Mary mentioned, then considered to be an honorary underworld planet, like as if Pluto was there with your personal planet. So there are many people out there that have alignments with a personal planet with the sun, and that definitely is reflected in their life in an underworld way.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. Is it because that Mars can travel so much further in the sky that for Mars it's 15 degrees to still be considered invisible in the sun?
Oh, yeah, it's a great question. So what that is for Mars, and I would say for Saturn as well, that if they're with each and any either one of those two planets get within 15 degrees of the sun, then they are considered in the hidden realm, in the underworld. And it's because the visibility of that planet is more challenging due to the close proximity of the sun from our perspective as we're standing here on Earth, what we call geocentric perspective. But Venus and Mercury and Jupiter, which are tend to be relatively bright in most cases. Mercury kind of varies significantly over time, flitting in and out of the sun from our perspective. We use the rule of thumb 10 degrees. And 10 degrees, for those of you that are aware or not, is when you go outside and see the night sky and you extend your arm with a closed hand or fist between the outside of one finger and your pinky, that is roughly 10 degrees in the sky. And one finger's width would be roughly a degree or degree and a half in the sky as well. So that's something you can do organically that we can see without any kind of optical aid or computer, that you can actually do this in the sky yourself. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question around the 15-degree mark.
All right, and I'd love to hear from our audience when we go to Q&A, how many of them have Pluto aspects on their chart because of personal planets being close to the sun versus Pluto being at a conjunct, square, or opposing one of those same planets. That's, you know, some of us have both. I get to raise my hand on all accounts. I have so much Pluto and Scorpio. It's easier for me to say where it's not than where it is.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. So we did discover something kind of fun while we were preparing for this. Do we want to share about the three spiritual expressions of Scorpio, Pluto that we discovered in terms of the symbolism that we've seen? Because I know both of us know that we've both seen it as a scorpion symbolizing Pluto and the Scorpio energy, but we've also heard that it's been called an eagle. And we delved into this a little bit further and found out there was really more to it than that. Any particular Pluto cycle is non-linear, and it's not logical. But the repeated occurrences of these cycles evolve our soul, it looks like, through higher expressions or octaves of the archetype. And that's kind of fun to understand what that is. The Scorpio itself, with its stinger, is the place to be where you begin learning Pluto and Scorpio. This is this one is ruled, it's when you're more ruled by your emotions when you're younger, and even instinct rather than your intellect. We can all remember back to our teens and 20s. This is when our personal esteem and self-awareness are not as developed, and we're more prone to wanting to protect ourselves or get angry about things, and which is a little bit more of a aggressive, destructive shadow response to things in life. So the scorpion is earthbound, and it really is a symbol of survival, which is, you know, in the Maslow hierarchy is kind of where we all begin. But then when the self-awareness and the personal esteem is more empowered as we go through the learning experiences, our emotions get tempered with more self-understanding, and there's less engagement in that previous behavior. So this expression of the Scorpio-Pluto energy is what is seen as the eagle. And the eagle is thought to soar proudly above, see a wider range from its perspective, have a wider range of goals to select from, and to be more objective while they continue to. This is the period in our life when we continue to kind of work on self-realization. Then the shadow or the unseen behavior or belief here is really to bring into light the awareness of how we use our power. We are no longer totally disempowered, but we have to choose how we use our power. And if we choose to manipulate or exploit others, we're kind of at a new learning level that still has some shadow. It's kind of like thinking about how an eagle can dart down and scoop up prey with, you know, that ability to see the vulnerability of what's down below on the earth from an eagle's perspective. And this is talked about even in the Bible when they talk about the eagle in relationship to this energy in the book of Apocalypse, Revelations 4:7. And then the final expression, which I was not familiar with this, it's, but we found it on at least three or four sites talking about how the third expression of this archetype, the highest expression, is the mystical healing power that really brings peace. And it's been symbolized by the dove. But to reach that stage, there's a transcendence and transformation through this fiery process of the phoenix, or which represents the sun, that burns away what is known as false fear. And then this resurrection from the ashes. And this is the expression of redemption, when we really shift from judging to finding compassion. And it, what this reminded me of, which was so fun, is that the serpent holder of Orpheus stands above the scorpion constellation in the sky, and the crown of Orpheus, the crown chakra star, aligns directly with the stinger of the scorpion. So I actually see that symbolism right in the sky, and I think that's so fun and interesting.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. In fact, just for those of you that, you know, are tuning in, and this particular, the three expressions, and that, you know, what we're referring to, yes, it is the scorpion constellation. Constellations are not the same as signs, but the scorpion itself has a long history of being identified with transformation, underworld type of energy. It sits at the threshold between, well, between that and the archer of the galactic center, which is really where souls go to die, where they go to their next chapter or whatever incarnation that might be after that, next world. And in fact, in regarding the three expressions, Mary, and James Hillman's work, he talks about that as well in relationship to Heraclitus' work. He refers that, James Hillman is a Jungian psychotherapist, and his book, The Dream and the Underworld, talks a lot about this, and actually, in other words that he uses, relates the same things that you have brought up forth, Mary, and one of those, especially related to Demeter, and also to Hecate, and these kinds of things that relate to the various levels of what the underworld or on are underground, and the differences between the two are shown. And the three levels of the underworld, he refers to G as in geo or geography, geophysical. G is in the kind of the first or upper realm there, the first realm of the underworld, where our viewpoint, as you mentioned, kind of the eagle's view of that. And then we have the in-between. In-between is like in between the stages of the deep chasm of the underworld, which is the third, and the chthonic realm, and then we have and the second level being that in-between realm between the two, the first and the third. I just find it fascinating that what you've shared is probably inspired in some part by their own research into this and related. I mean, I don't know if it was James Hillman or others have commented on this, but this is really fascinating material that is about the underworld.
Thank you. I love it.
Yeah.
There's
always more to learn. So the next step here, before we go into Q&A and sharing of the questions that were sent forth ahead of time, would be the gifts and purpose of Pluto and its archetypal resonant sign of Scorpio.
I love it.
So,
you want to start
Mary,
with that?
Go for it.
Okay. Well, it's all about change. We know that. And we know that change has edges. Whenever there's change, there's a beginning, there's an end, the alpha, the omega. And Kaylin has beautifully said that edges can be seen as dividing lines between one where one thing leaves off and another one begins. We each experience different degrees of fear around the edges of change, and sometimes avoidance is a common way to address these unfamiliar edges. Is just not even go there. I have a little personal story that I thought fit into this part really well, and it was when I was in my 20s. I completed college. I started a career as an art instructor. In my own hometown. And I wanted to travel and live beyond my hometown, but I was deeply afraid of leaving my tribe. I had that same sort of fear to overcome when I moved into my first apartment at 19 and took my first step to individual
individualization. Anyway, I found it was paralyzing, and I don't think that's uncommon, but I just remember how strong it was. I didn't know anything about Pluto's cycle, like most of us didn't at that time, or what it meant to have a Pluto complex with Pluto conjunct square or opposing so many things on my angles and my planets on my natal chart. But I can still remember vividly what it felt like when I came into this Pluto cycle. And the purpose of this cycle, obviously, was to get me to leave my hometown. In order to leave my tribe, it took a series of such terrifying events that I no longer really had a choice to stay. It was so interesting how what I really discovered, I guess, was that I wouldn't leave my comfort zone, so my comfort zone just kind of left me. I was in an apartment fire in the middle of the night in the dead of winter, and then experienced the death of a friend in a very violent, strange accident, and then another accident sent me into surgery. And this was like day after day, week after week. I just had this long series of weird things that just all took place at the same time. And looking back, I have to think that maybe my own soul created these things, because I had this desire to leave, but I didn't have the courage that I needed to do it. It was just that, I finally had to surrender and let go of what was stopping me, because I just, felt like I was in a pinball machine ricocheting between traumas. So the fear that once protected me and kept me safe had become a prisoner, and it was time to just let go of it and grow. And once I emerged from that fear, what happened was it was easy to take the action and to feel the excitement and vitality and new freedom and adventure. It took me a lot longer to see the gift in what I'd experienced, but it was a gift, and clearly it pushed me into my own personal power. I wouldn't be where I'm at now if it hadn't happened. So that was like the first Pluto cycle that I'm conscious of that I've gone back and looked at. And I'm sure there's more stories to come before we get off the phone today. Yeah.
Yes. There's a quote I want to read from James Hillman about being in the underworld. And he quotes this in his book, The Dream in the Underworld. "For in the underworld, all is stripped away and life is upside down." So when he says all, that means everything. That means it's a complete stripping of, and one of the references to Mary, I think you brought up the goddess Inanna, when she is faced in front of Erish Kegel, her sister in the underworld, and from ancient Sumerian mythology, she is naked to the world, naked to the underworld. She's stripped of everything. She only has just the essence of what she is, and is faced with that prospect. And that shows what an initiation for Pluto or the underworld is about, is stripping of what we are attached to. There is no prejudice around that. It goes in without bias. It's simply that's the process, and one has to move into that and surrender into that. I know I have several years where when Pluto between 95 and 2009, for me, I had successive Pluto cycles. Pluto in Sagittarius, and then just briefly in Capricorn in 08 and 09, I had a series of seven complete Pluto cycles in that period of time, which really characterized, defined a lot of things, powerful events in my life, along with combination with some others. But I remember having to repeatedly surrender to that process, to surrender to after resisting. After fighting it, waving the white flag in my own way, moving into that process and having to simply accept what could come from the unknown, and not, and the unknown being, you know, in human beings, it can be a really scary place, because we have a certain attachment to what is known and what is predictable and order, and then when chaos stirs, there's a certain innate resistance in us, for the most part. And I know many of you out there that are listening to this, not only today but later down the road, probably have many stories that are all about this kind of experience in our lives, that where we get stripped down to the bare bones and nothing else left to do but to surrender. And I know that the most recent experience I had in 2016, when Pluto was on my ascendant in Capricorn, I had a near-death experience with the flu that I would say I haven't had the flu all that often in my life, but I've never experienced, at least certainly consciously, how that was in such a way where I had nothing left to give. I had nothing left to try to fight. I simply had to accept what was there and move with that underworld energy, and through a very powerful underworld dream vision that I had at that time, in the intensity of that illness. And I'm imagining many of you out there that may have had some experiences that have taken you down to such an extent that you have no choice but to surrender to that. And
trust.
For those
and trust.
Yes, and trust, and have faith.
And
but
trust.
Even then, we might not even have the energy to have no choice but to trust, which that's what happened to me. And just to clarify, and I know, Mary, you brought this up too, and we had somebody else out there, Sheridan, who brought this up, is, you know, the difference here, we have Pluto complexes. And what Pluto complexes are is when we have, as Mary mentioned, a personal planet or point that has a dynamic relationship with Pluto. That means it's close by on our chart, either conjunction or in a square or in a polarity opposition to the underworld planet. And then the transit is a moving initiation. It happens in time. And there are some differences between having a Pluto complex in our lives and having a Pluto initiation in our lives. And so, you know, I know that that's something we can comment on here, and you know, because there's certain levels of subtleties and experiences where the complex becomes a theme in our life and initiation becomes something more transient in our life, but still powerful while it's certainly happening to us. Was there anything else you wanted to share there, Mary?
Well, I just think that sometimes when we hang on too tight, like you were saying, what we do get is illness. Sometimes there's actually mental depression that comes with a Pluto cycle. And so that's another way of recognizing it. Sometimes the Pluto cycles really aren't even all that challenging. It just depends on what your needs are at the time and what you need to release to get to the next level. That's all, you know, that's all edge walking. Part of it is, really in that edge walking, you're seeking out the edge of your current beliefs and you're making a conscious choice to move out to explore and expand new aliveness. But not everybody does that. Sometimes we stay in the middle, and what we know is we can't know the nature of the universe that contains us if we stay in the middle. We have to get out to the edges. So you have to be willing to walk or to sweep the edges of the old and bridge it with what's new and dying. And, it does. It takes trust. It takes courage. And it's really by allowing the death of what needs to die that we create space to birth new ideas and new ways of being. And, yeah, trusting and surrendering one for the other is basically what we're doing, the old for the new. So, yeah. It's interesting how we experience them differently, definitely.
So would you like to go to the emails?
Sure, yes, let's do that. We want to make sure we cover what people are specifically asking.
Yeah, so Sheridan, she's asking about Pluto conjuncting her Virgo moon. She also has Uranus there, and she gets confused around what those initiation means, you know, together. I want to look at to see if she's referring to on her natal chart here. But let's see. Oh yeah, it's in her natal chart, so it's a complex on her moon, Pluto and Uranus in conjunction with her Virgo moon. So that's what she's referring to. She doesn't have a Pluto story to share, but she's wondering, it's kind of an interpretation of this.
Okay.
And then she has a secondary question about the houses and the role they play in shamanic astrology. But we can do a further call just about the houses at a later time.
My understanding of Pluto, I mean, I like to take these apart and then synthesize it. So if you look at Pluto to a Virgo moon, and that means you came in understanding the patterns of life and having had sacred work to do. I mean, you may be, you know, had lifetimes in the nunnery even. I mean, that Virgo can be working with the patterns of life in many ways. But if you have Pluto natally conjunct it, you're not necessarily going to have much awareness of that. And so if you look at that separately, if you go through a Pluto cycle to that, that may be how you clear that. That may be how you get rid of even an addiction to the Virgo moon, is going through a Pluto experience. And then if you you said she has Uranus also within a few degrees of it, is that correct?
Yeah, within nine degrees of her moon.
Okay, so that's going to make the expression of her Virgo moon unique, unusual, novel, even revolutionary, right? I mean, that's how that plays out. So I guess, you know, the question she may have is, well, how can it have been erased or less apparent and yet be so unusual? I would want to ask her how she feels that her Virgo moon expresses, how she experiences her Virgo moon, if she has a lot of awareness of it. And if she does, how unique is that beautiful patterning of life? I would think somebody who is even in deeply devoted to astrology, that is a big pattern of life that has not been in acceptance for quite some time. It was popular in the 60s, it went out, but we're still, you know, really in a patriarchal time that's trying to dissolve. So you kind of have to find your own tribe, that's my experience, to feel comfortable working with astrology. And I think somebody really dedicated to the pattern of life, that makes sense to, or maybe in the past having been, because your moon is an expression of your past expertise that you brought into this life when you incarnated. And you're supposed to use it a third of the time in this life. So maybe we could unmute Sherida and get some input from her if she feels she does use that a third of the time, and if she does find it to be an unusual, revolutionary type of an expression of her moon.
Yeah, I'd like to just make you know, add to what you're sharing there, Mary, around this, and that, you know, there is a level of, you know, Pluto that like Uranus, is somewhat unpredictable. I mean, it is not something that is rational or about order or about the third dimension. It is something that goes into the deepest of the deep, the realms within ourselves. And it can, with Virgo being on the an earthy sign about the pattern and rhythm, it could send that into a state of chaotic expression, or being prone anyway to death and rebirth experiences in that moon, and trying to move away from that old patterning into something new. In her, obviously, her Venus and Mars and Sun, Mercury and Ascendant, that are all they're emerging in this lifetime, emerging identity, a goddess, the fuel that you're burning, the mind, they're all coming into form, into a new expression. And so this moon is there to be a foundation, to be of support to that. And so Pluto and Uranus are there to provide that complex process for a person to go beyond their moon and into the rest of their chart. As a theme, but then of course, when a planet goes over that area of her chart, or squares it, or conjuncts it, or opposes it, you know, you're going to get that complex is going to be activated for them. And so, but yeah, I agree that Sheridan is on this call, and we can unmute her and see what she has to say.
Perfect. And the other point that I didn't make is that it definitely, Pluto being on that moon, adds Scorpio energy to it.
Yes.
So that's the other piece of it too. Okay.
Yes.
Sheridan.
So, Sheridan, are you there?
I am. Hi. How are you?
We're good.
Thank you for talking about my question. I appreciate it. And it was interesting, as we were talking, I got out the ephemeris and I was like, oh, hey, I could look and see if, like, I can remember any of the Pluto initiation cycles. And I think it's pertinent to what you're saying, because I realized in 2005, I would have gone through my first square to that moon. And so that was this year that I had been in this, like, really emotionally and psychologically abusive relationship with this guy. And I finally, like, it was so brutal and stressful and just smashing my head against the wall until finally, you know, I had this, like, huge epiphany moment where I, like, got the clarity of, like, wow, I could really trust myself and trust my knowing, and essentially, in a way, like, trust what I see the patterns are, you know, and not keep trying to, like, undermine that. And it was like, and then I just walked away and moved back to Colorado, and like my whole life changed. And it was like this huge cycle that took me into this new level of empowerment. So it's like, okay, wow, that's powerful. But I do see how, like, what you were talking about, that, you know, my moon, that, like, energy, that medicine for me was, like, hidden for a really, really long time, until much even after that Pluto cycle, really, until in the last few years that I've even started to, like, uncover and really connect to that whole Virgo component. And so I think that's totally apropos what you were saying. And then that Uranus piece just adds to it, that it's like, yeah, I'm doing it in a different way, right? Here we are on a, you know, shamanic astrology call, you know, it's just case in point, you know, but, like, you know, and I work with, you know, in my practice of holistic health stuff, I use a lot of, like, really unusual aromatherapy in a very, like, shamanic way, you know, so there's a lot of all those underworld, you know, Scorpio type themes. And I just want to say lastly too, Mary, that just so you know, I have, like, a ton of underworld stuff on my chart. Like, that whole Pluto Uranus on my moon thing is just the beginning of it all. So I feel you, girl.
Underworld sisters we are.
When
you first went into that Pluto cycle, the dark night of the soul for that Virgo, if it was to your moon, is that what it was to? Then you would, I mean, what Daniel says about that is that you would be taking on a lot of suffering, which sounds like you did. And you'd really feel like there wasn't anybody to care for you. Nobody would care until you made the decision yourself to care and take care of yourself. And until you could do that, you probably felt a great deal of stress and push and pull. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a really, really intense time for sure. You know, I just felt like I was losing my mind. And then to come to find that, you know, I wasn't the whole entire time. I was spot on, you know? So it's like, it's just like you say, you come through the other side and it's so completely empowering. You know, it's kind of like you come out the other side and there you were the whole entire time, you know? So.
Yeah.
I had a quote from the psychologist Richard Tarnas that defines it even stronger as part of the birthing process. He says, this is the catharsis of volcanic energy. When pent-up energy is released, it is purification and cleansing with a fiery energy quality called pyrocatharsis, as in the third stage of prenatal development, when titanic pulses of labor conclude in a spiritual rebirth propulsion from the depth of the psyche, when somatic tendencies are released, propelled from the unconscious into the conscious.
Wow.
From his perspective and working with patients, he and Stanislav Goff work with the outer planets, but they use that totally in their practices, and they compare the outer planet initiation cycles to different stages of the birth and development, prenatal development cycles, which is pretty interesting. But that is basically, what he's describing are the labor pains that push the baby out. That's what they're comparing to the Pluto cycle. So, yeah.
Which seems really exactly what it is. You know, that's a really good description of it for sure, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's that whole cycle of death and rebirth. And I think part of the beauty of getting in sync with Pluto cycles is really taking on an understanding that there is reincarnation. I mean, we have the choice to believe that, but if we really see this pattern, this deep pattern of everything seasonally being born, and then you get to Samhain and Scorpio, and it's all about death and dying, but the leaves that fall are the fertilizer for those little seeds that fall to grow into something new and magnificent in the spring. I mean, it is everywhere. It's a pattern that is just always repeated. So why would our lives be any different when it, you know, it really reinforces my belief system, that our souls do continue to evolve through these cycles and through their lifetimes.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing about that cycle too, is that Pluto, all that sits on that my Virgo moon, right? And like so much of, I think, where there was like hidden and where that wasn't okay to be my mom has a lot of Virgo on her chart, and that's where a lot of like initiation cycles for me have originated. And the most interesting thing is that relationship was really me working out a lot of stuff with my mom. So it's like, it's kind of just interesting how much there's like a Virgo component to it that's so like familial as well. And that, you know, the dark night of the soul and come birthing on the other side was so much of addressing my disempowerment and my relationship with my mom. You know, it's just, it's fun. The layers are like mind-blowing of all of it, really.
And a lot of times our souls reincarnate with a soul family. And I find that really common with people I work with, that there's like two or three archetypes that keep repeating within the siblings and the parents. It's not like they're randomly all of them. It really does always appear that we call in people that have some of the same archetypes like that and do work through generational experiences. Yeah, no.
That makes a lot of sense, because I haven't done a lot of readings for families, but a little bit, and I'm always like, whoa, you guys are all like working out like the same things, and your daughter's thing like helps you figure out the thing you can. I was just like, it's kind of blown my mind, but it's been limited, so I haven't really known that that's like a pattern, but that's really cool.
Yeah, you can kind of look for it. Even with your siblings and your mom, try to see which ones keep popping up. All right. So,
yeah, thank you.
If you're complete, or if you have other questions, how does that work?
No, that's good. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. I really appreciate you coming on the call.
Thank you for having it.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It's such a great learning time, because I've studied it for a long time, but I get to try to bring it all together and share it, and that's fun. All right. Do we have other? We had another question, didn't we, to address Eric? Was there another send-in?
Yes, there was, but I wanted to just make a comment about this particular, well, flu in general, is that, and Sheridan mentioned it earlier about disempowering, but it can also act as a violation of that particular lineage of the past. Mm-hmm. It certainly relates to family, except it's the moon. There is a major, dose of issues with family around that, and the parents in particular around what a outer planet, if it's conjunct, square, or in opposition to the moon, plays a huge role in that moon's expression in this lifetime and the foundation that they have. So, yes, they can feel that disempowering, that violating of whatever archetype that might be. And for Sheridan, it's Virgo and, the sacred rhythm and patterning, from the earth plane, detail-oriented, analytical, the sovereignty of the feminine itself.
Oh, what I love about Sam's, Eric, is the fact that all of the archetypes are equal, and the whole idea that in the past and still in traditional astrology, certain ones were just, not in favor. And especially if you were self-interest, I have a lot of self-interest, or in spirit-to-spirit even, those ones, it was primarily the culture-bearing archetypes that were in favor. So, yeah, it's so interesting how we've become who we are from the shoulders that we stand upon, and that there's been reoccurring themes that we're still working out generations later. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, for the next question comes from Amuna, and she is on the call. So her question has to do with an intense experience on September 2nd. And I did look at her chart, and Mary, I was sharing with you earlier that, on her chart, the only thing that I see contributes to what that could possibly be without knowing what event it is, or what the nature of the intense experience is Jupiter over her midheaven and in Sagittarius. But that may seem odd, but she has a Pluto complex associated with the right livelihood, which, for those of you that aren't aware, the right livelihood, when we say that, is we're referring to a person's midheaven and home and roots, which on a natal chart is represented by the MC symbol and the IC symbol, and they're always opposite. So the sort of the top of the ecliptic and the one that's on the bottom below us. And so her Midheavens in Sagittarius and her home and roots is in Gemini. And so that could it could have to do with her expression in the world, her home life, how she feels at home within, and whatever vibration that that was apparent in the an intense experience. So I'm going to ask that Muna, I'm going to unmute her and see what she has to say.
Good.
Amuna, are you
Hi
there?
Hi there. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. I can hear you.
Yeah. I this is about the seventh or eighth call, time that I'm calling in since the beginning of the call. I get dropped all the time. So if I suddenly disappear, that's why. But that would be a very Plutonian thing, so it works out. So, yeah, I guess I'm trying to figure out, I looked at that chart, and at the time, it felt very, very Plutonic, the whole thing, and but for the life of me, I can't figure out what exactly the relationship was, and I ended up with actually the other way around. Knowing that that was happening, I did a lot of stuff like did some vision board type collage things and really went deep inside with some like reset button, which also worked with the Jewish calendar. So I don't know exactly. I thought maybe you would see something there. At the, I mean, I have a bit of a Pluto complex, don't I, with that in just in my chart with Virgo and I'm like all the way, it's like my ascendant, Venus right on top of each other, and Chiron, they're all right across from Pluto, right?
Yeah, you have a you know, a significant Pluto complex. You know, Pluto conjunct your descendant in opposition to your natal Venus. Yeah, and Chiron's involved in that. So is Uranus, and
right.
On the outside, the Sun. So that's all heavily involved, all clustered in there in that polarity.
Yeah. Well, and I remember Eric when you were the first person who gave me a shamanic astrology reading, and you, I do remember you talking about there's certainly quite a bit of underworld in here, and it certainly has been. I mean, I've had to, and right now I find is another really, really, really strong time of this like underworld energy that's been going on recently with all this Scorpio and where we're at. I mean, we're in Scorpio right now, so yeah.
We're not just Sun. I mean, we have everything. We have a ton of stuff in Scorpio right now.
If you, I don't know how many other questions there are. There's like one other question I would have that has to do with another chart that just popped up in my life with someone recently, but I'd like to give others the opportunity to ask questions first. So I don't know how much time we have and how many people there are that have their hand raised. So you go ahead,
well,
whatever you think.
I haven't started the Q&A. I am about to start that Q&A because there's a few others that are on here that might have questions. So,
okay, so go ahead.
Are you
if
sure?
If we have time at the end, we can come back. Yeah,
if we have time, I'll come back. And otherwise, I'll email you something really fascinating, and I don't have Mary's email, so I think you would really appreciate that, and I'll be happy to just share it with you personally, too, and that way other people have a chance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this. This is really amazing. Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to put a Q&A on. So for those that haven't asked a question and desire to, you can hit star 6 and get into the Q&A, and Mary and I can be of assistance there. So Mary, you know, there are a few others on here, but I can wait. We can wait for them to check in with us. You know, this Pluto subject matter that we're talking about. I know that, you know, in my own life here, natally, I have Pluto square Mercury and Venus. I was born with Mercury and Venus in Sagittarius in the latter degrees of that sign, and definitely have had significant life themes around the communication perception in Sagittarius, as well as in my relationship to the feminine. And I've had some very powerful, potent, juicy experiences in coming to terms with that, but also working with that in a constructive way, in a way that ultimately empowers me. So I'm grateful for Pluto's presence in that form. It's a continual teacher and guide for me to work with and celebrate. An interesting little tidbit of trivia, and I wrote this, I may include this article with everyone when I post the recording by tomorrow, is that in December of 2015, Pluto was, I was in a Pluto cycle, and I was on a walk. I was living in temporarily in Tucson, and I went for a walk along one of the rivers, or the dry riverbeds that they have out there. And there was a glyph that was spray painted on the concrete, on the asphalt of this path. And I had never seen anything quite like that before in that way, and it really struck me, and I photographed it and later wrote about it. But when I went back and checked Pluto's position in relationship to my ascendant, it was within a few minutes, you know, a tenth of a degree away from my ascendant, almost nearly exact for all intents and purposes. So that was a very personal experience that I was certainly in the midst of a lot of underworld in my life in 2015 and 2016 due to this particular Pluto cycle. But yeah, so for those of you that are, you know, sometimes this can pop into the physical realm, you know, through the deepest of the darkest chasms that can come in the primal realm where you know, the power of creation takes place in here in the earth plane. And so that was speaking to my soul in an incredible way.
Yes, wow. And you and I have this in common, having Pluto squaring our opposite gender planets, our opposite sex planets. And that is a very strong message to both of us and to anybody else out there that has that, because when you have Pluto square your opposite sex planet, you really are here. You really have to face your greatest fears and ultimately become empowered around relationship by surrendering all relationships and by really finding your relationship with yourself. It really is about that. Whatever that mm-hmm. archetype is that your opposite sex planet is in, mine is Scorpio, so it's just more Pluto. But until, you know, I was able to embrace that and do my sacred marriage, I wasn't real successful in relationships. So it's really that inner marriage and working on that. The soul uses this strategy of Pluto to take us kind of beyond where we might reach otherwise. It doesn't let us get away with not having that relationship in our own life with ourselves in that archetypal theme. So, yeah, that's another good thing just to know about how Pluto works on a natal chart.
Yeah, and thank you. That's I love that. And I was just thinking too about the other symbol of the Pluto for death and rebirth, and how when we're experiencing those and giving us a chance to grieve, whatever that is that we're feeling like we're losing or we're lost, or that we have lost something, maybe it's something's emerged and yet part of our self is being let go, and there's a necessary happening there for us to embrace this emerging thing. But in order for that to truly be flowering, to truly blossom, is to grieve that which has been lost. And brought up, I think, earlier about our relationship to, in this culture here in the United States, of death and grief and, you know, sadness and things, you know, there's a certain culture around trying to be tough and strong and cover it up and overcome, and you know, that's all wonderful and everything, but it leaves the person without full closure or fully able to truly grieve what they need to grieve, whatever that mm-hmm. might particular thing be. And so we certainly want to and have a different relationship with death, a different relationship with fear, mm-hmm. to not be afraid to come to terms with. I find it fascinating that some of the major things that have come of light in recent years is reparations around America's relationship to slavery before and the early stages of us as a country, but also with the Native Americans as well, and that we, our admission and our relationship to that, you know, it's as if we can't, as a country, haven't been able to truly face it as a collective here in this Western country, Western nation. It doesn't mean that no one's done any work in there. There's certainly been some and plenty of work in certain corners, but as far as the fullness of the grieving, the fullness of coming to terms, the fullness of accountability, especially in this Pluto and Capricorn age, is, you know, it's really, it's irresponsible for us to not to come to terms with that as a government, as a people. And so that's something, you know, within each of us, because it's part of the land that one might say the ghosts of the land. I mean, it's part of this, what we're walking around on, what we're breathing in. So, I don't know what you might, your thoughts on that are, Mary.
I think, what you were describing was denial, and that's one of the main characteristics of the less enlightened Pluto. It's one of the things that, you know, that we try to shed. We tend to project out onto others, and we often fear or despise them because we're projecting what we're denying within ourselves, when in reality it's part of ourselves, it's our own humanity. And we have to really embrace that when we go through that death experience. We have to get real about it because it's so deep in the unconscious. And then that means being present, and that means feeling the emotions around it. And we are so shut off. As a culture, we've become so numb. So it's not surprising. We can think of the Pluto cycle as catharsis, of purging and releasing what suppressed emotions, you know, that we haven't been brave enough to, you know, to really embrace. My example of that was when I turned 40 years old, and I had two older sisters who started this email conversation with myself and my younger sibling, saying that, you know, we were abused growing up. And I was, you know, I just had this searing reaction of, no, we weren't. And I kept that up for a couple of years until slowly I just allowed the truth to seep into a very armored heart that had so much love and compassion for my parents that I just couldn't put my arms around what really was experienced. And I think that level of denial is prevalent at a collective level and at a personal level. We become so armored, and we can't even grieve what we've lost because we're in such deep denial of these traumas. And then once we let it seep in, we just become compassionate in a whole different way. A lot of times we have compassion for other races that have had bad experience. Sometimes it's the compassion for ourselves that we really need to develop. So I think that's an important piece of what Pluto teaches us, along with how to involve ourselves more deeply with creation by freeing up all this energy that basically has been blocked. It's that passion, that energy, and that feeling that's really a huge piece of how we co-create what we desire in life. And if we can't feel, and if we can't release and surrender, then we stay stuck, and our lives become half-lived. So, yeah. There's a lot.
I wanted to see if maybe, since no one else has chimed in, if Amona wants to share that extra question before we close up. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Amona, are you
all
there?
Right. Yeah, hi. So I don't know if you can, like, at the tip of a finger, if I give you a date and a place and a birth time, and I'll show you, like, if you can pull up this chart, because what happened a few days ago, I'm starting on a new story, and the protagonist, suddenly I had to sing about, she's going to have a lot of Scorpio. And, you know, I'm pretty much a beginner, so it's not like I have, like, any kind of knowledge of when exactly. Like, I know that when the sun was in Scorpio and, you know, in a particular time in a year, but other than that, I wouldn't know. And I pulled up this chart according to kind of what age I wanted her to be, what year it would be. So, and it was the 4th of November that I thought this, and then I took 1976 for reasons that are not important, and I took Frankfurt, Germany, because that's important for other reasons to the story. And then I took my birth time, 8 a.m. If you look at that, and I said a lot of Scorpio. If you look at that chart, there's like six symbols in Scorpio in the first house. And it's got Pluto directly across from the moon. In the difference, like Pluto's elsewhere. I don't know if you can see. So Pluto is in the 12th house and has the moon in the 6th house, like 1 degree off, 13 Aries to 12 Libra. I mean, you can't make this, excuse my language, I don't usually use this language, you can't make this shit up. I mean, this is, like, if I had looked for a chart like this, then on top of it, it has a trine of Saturn with Venus and Neptune conjunct, also going over to, that's a grand trine even, if I see this correctly, also with the moon, and whatever that, I don't know what that point of fortune means. I don't know what that is. So, I mean, could I have picked a chart like this? Like, how long would it that have taken me to find this?
I mean, I pulled up the chart, and it has in Scorpio, North Node, Uranus, Mercury, Sun, Ascendant, and Mars, all within 15 degrees of each other in Scorpio.
Wow.
Right, and the rising sign, that's right, and rising sign and Mars directly on top of each other, too.
Right, and then the Moon and Pluto opposition, Moon and Aries,
right.
Pluto and Libra. So that's I would say that this person signed up for some really powerful, very intense, death through birth experiences, taking things to the very edge and beyond in very extreme ways. But then he or she's got this Venus-Neptune conjunction, which also plays a role. And then Saturn squares most of the energy that's in Scorpio.
That's right. So Saturn complex too,
So this could be even, it could even be where there's a complete invalidation of Scorpio, and that the person will be going through some certain trials to be able to release that within themselves and have a certain courage to use it at some
point.
That
makes sense. You know what? That makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah. And then there's that lonely Jupiter in Taurus over there. Eh? What do you think? I mean, if you look at that, that's the only, everything else is like totally connected, telling this like similar stories.
Well, their path to enlightenment is going to be through, you know, the Aphrodite kind of storyline of finding what's beautiful in life. That will be their saving grace, is having that ability to really see the beauty beyond the mud. And I apologize because I don't have my computer that has my software on it to pull up your chart. So I'm really happy that Eric is able to do that and give you some insight from looking at the chart.
Thank you so much. This was really fun. I mean, I know this person, but of course she only exists as a fictional character. But this makes her so deep now and have this. And it makes total sense what you said too, Mary. So thank you. Thank you. Very fun. Who would ever know?
I want to read your story. I want to read
fun,
it.
Eh?
Wow. That's so interesting. Who would have thought as a writer to create a character that way? I think that is so cool.
Yeah, so that's fascinating. It's definitely a chart that is quite intense, and yet it has that Saturn position there that gives it a sense of perhaps even a certain stability and certain corners, and ability to work with the Earth energy a little more in a real world way, and you know, where they can be governed in a sense in their lives with ability to not only, I'm not talking about just ambition or doing the right thing, being able to stand up and actually do what's possible. But he or she, that whatever character we, our gender it is, they're gonna, in order to truly learn about Scorpios, to really take things to the very edge and beyond, to do it more than once for sure, and have those a really potent experience to really fulfill their life purpose.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Eric, I think one of the things briefly that, and we didn't really talk about, that's helpful to know is people that have these deep underworld charts, which we really seem to focus on. These are the people that are drawn to shamanic astrology, by the way. And they tend to feel in life like the rug is always pulled out from under them. When I met my partner and I looked at his chart and I used that description, seeing his chart, he was wordless because no one had ever put words to the experiences that he'd continually had in his life. So that's kind of the beauty of understanding. Even when Daniel explained to me about my chart, my life made more sense. And I was able to cope with it different. I want to recommend a book that I really did have a lot of excerpts out of, but we ran out of time. It's called The Fear Cure, and it's written by Lisa Rankin, and it is wonderful because we know now from medicine and science that if you've got a lot of stress in your life, if you're in a lot of denial, if you go through a lot of these cycles without really understanding the different coping mechanisms and some real simple things to understand that make it easier, it is very related to getting sick. And it can even kill you. It's related to cancer. This whole book goes through all these diseases and how fear-based thinking and living is so connected biochemically to how our body functions. And then there's all these, there's a couple summits going on right now about anxiety and about this exact same thing. So, yeah, if you've got it's fun to learn about fear in a good way and fun to really get a sense for how your own game of life is being played. And how you can't change it, but you can certainly get a different perspective of it. So, I would just recommend that book, and we can put the name of that on the site along with the talk too.
That would be wonderful to have there for sure. I do like Kaylin's description, I don't remember if she's the one who came up with it, but she frequently uses it, the chrysalis stage in a Pluto initiation, mm-hmm. You know, where, and Daniel uses a lot the term composting. And, you know, it really is. It's kind of a liquefaction where something's turning into something else. It's a transformation. So, you know, facing fears, I'd like to read that book myself. Facing fears we all need to do that. And just like you said, yeah, absolutely. If we keep holding it in, you know, that could, be very dangerous to us in the long run.
Right. I think this whole fight and flight and the stress mechanism that we're learning more about is all so connected to that. And there's four real simple principles that just underlie chapters and chapters of things you can do to strengthen your resilience to this. But one of them is just know that uncertainty is really the beautiful womb of all possibility. And that loss is natural and leads to growth, and that we live in a purposeful universe, and underneath it all, we're all one. And coming back to those just very fundamental principles, they really underlie that, you know, the opposite of fear is joy. And so we're playing a game here between these opposites, but culturally and within our own family training, we don't necessarily learn to see it that way. I'm inviting everybody to, you know, to just expand their idea of fear and Pluto and be able to celebrate it on a higher level, I guess. Yeah.
Well said. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Eric. This has been fun, and thank you for everybody that listened in. And if you want your questions answered more privately, please type them up, send them in. We're happy to do that. I'm maryjkern@gmail.com if you want to send it to me, or ask Eric if you want us to do it together. We're happy to do them together and give you a composite, because we really care about our members and we want to engage you more in this amazing process.
Absolutely. And we'll have our emails listed for those of you that desire to share a question or two or a story.
Okay.
All right. I think this concludes this call, and we'll be back with another installment in the not too distant future here. Maybe after the holidays are over, there's plenty of other things that the school is doing coming up here soon, and in December too. So we look forward to more participation and sharing and building our community and around shamanic astrology and beyond.
And join us tomorrow night.
Yeah. And just to thank Daniel Giammario and Kaylin Castell for the work that they've done, and Daniel for his creation of the paradigm, and Kaylin for her unending assistance and creative insight into all that's been involved. And so this is how we're able now to do these calls and keep creating, keep co-creating.
Right, and the cross-quarter call is at 5:00 on. You know, we have two calls 2 days in a row. So is cross-quarter tomorrow, Eric?
No, that's on November 14th.
That's what I thought.
The tomorrow call, that's an internal call. Right. That's not a school call.
Yeah, so you have a day off, and then please join us again. Yes.
Yes, so with the water quadrant, Scorpio.
Mm-hmm. Ah, related.
more Scorpio. All right.
If you didn't ask your questions tonight, you can probably ask them there. It's still going to be
that's
the same
right.
energy. That's right. Okay, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Take care, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.